On today's episode of The Good Word, Ice Young joins us to discuss the biggest disappointments of this young NBA season, including the 76ers team meeting and who should have really been calling out Joel Embiid, Zion Williamson and another discussion about his health in New Orleans, and preseason MVP favorite Luka Doncic, who has not been living up to the hype. All that and much more coming up right now. Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports and the host of this show. It is a Wednesday, ladies and gentlemen. We are joined by Ice Young, as we are each and every Wednesday, as long as we are doing this on Wednesday. We took off last week because Veterans Day switched off the whole schedule, but she is back. Ice, how you doing?
I'm good. College basketball is in full swing for me now. So traveling a couple times a week, working games, killing plants. A couple of my plants in my home are not making it right now. I don't know what's going on, but like two or three of them I had to cut and trim, including this one, which is like my favorite. So I feel like she looks skinny now and frail. I don't know what's going on. But anyway, other than my plants.
Looks like poison ivy behind you. That's what it looks like.
Ooh, and that's what it's supposed to give. Dangerous. Yes. I'm glad. Thank you. No, I'm joking. But we're going to work on it. I need her to revive soon. I need some sunlight to come through. Other than my plants, though, I'm fantastic. How are you?
Well, you live in Philly and ain't a whole lot of positive sunlight things to talk about there. Before we get there, don't forget to check out her appearance on the Good Follow podcast. Ice, if you follow her on the Instagram, she is all over, you know, talking to teams, you know, college basketball teams and taking photos and selfies with all of them and all that type of stuff. I dig it. But Ice, we're going to start with where you are, the Philadelphia 76ers. By far, I think with today's theme being most disappointing teams and players, we have to start with the 76ers, right? And they are, as of right now, 2-11. And added to that, team turmoil, right? A little bit of team turmoil. Had an hour-long team meeting after their last loss to the Miami Heat on Monday night. Nick Nurse did not come out to talk to the media until, you know, coaches usually come out 10 minutes after a game. Nick Nurse did not come out for an hour. Details wound up trickling out a little bit after that. Tyrese Maxey called out Joel Embiid about, you know, his habits, about basically professionalism, showing up on time, you know, being a catalyst for everything that trickles down to the rest of the team. That, to me, is just the tip of the iceberg for them. Ice, what do you see with the 76ers?
Yeah, I feel like I see, one, a lack of leadership. You know, I've been on a team before where things aren't going well. You know, I was at Syracuse and we had dropped back-to-back ACC games and shouldn't have that year. And so I remember, you know, calling a team meeting, and it's always interesting, you know, who's called out in those. Sometimes it's the role players who maybe aren't locked in fully because they're not getting as much time. And so their energy and effort and kind of them not being locked in affects everyone else. And it's the main players who are locked in and ready to go. And so they're trying to get everyone else bought in with them. Or you see what you're seeing with the 76ers, which is that, you know, their main player in Joel Embiid is not locked in from a leadership standpoint, you know, does not look great on the court. And we expected this. I mean, we have had conversations before about him being injured, having to get back in shape, him not playing back to backs, you know, or not wanting to. And so all the management of things. But I think for Tyrese Maxey, a young player who is injured right now because he was doing too much trying to compensate for the Sixers and their main players being injured and Paul George and Embiid, is now like, yo, I'm a young guy trying to win. We need professionalism. You know, we need you to be on time as the leader of the team. That is the bare minimum standard or expectation.
For me, it is one of those weird things where, and I'm glad you talked about it from your perspective as a player. Whenever we hear about team meetings, these things are purposely told to us so that we know that players on the team, whoever called the team meeting, is ringing the alarm. Hey, we got issues here.
Right.
So many things come up for me in this. Like, just rock with me here. For one, Paul George is hurt. or coming off of an injury. He suffered in the preseason. And we always know that there's going to be this thing with Paul George and injuries. Like you said, Tyrese Maxey, before he got hurt, was averaging 42 minutes a night. That's a recipe to get hurt if you are a small guard in today's game carrying the load that he was carrying. Joel Embiid, perpetually hurt. Remember, he had the surgery last season, came back in the playoffs, played remarkably well in that first round series against the Knicks, and then I also had to deal with Bell's palsy, right? Like he was dealing with a lot. And instead of taking the summer off and resting and getting ready for this season, he wanted to go to the Olympics and not just play for Paris, where he had citizenship.
Right.
He played for the United States. And he was critical in the game against Serbia, against Nikola Jokic. So it was worth it for the U.S. men's national team for him to be there. Okay, cool. But now you come back this season to your job and you're not ready to play. Mm. And you're not ready to play because you're hurt. And then there's the incident with Marcus Hayes. You know what I mean? Like, it's all these things that get in the way of winning. I'll tell you something else that I think is sticking in Joel Embiid's craw. He wanted the 76ers with all the changes they made. Remember, they went and got Caleb Martin. They went and got Kyle Lowry. That means they went and made deals with players who play for the Miami Heat. He wanted another player from the Miami Heat. He wanted Jimmy Butler. He wanted the 76ers. He told them, go get my guy. And we know at the end of the season where Jimmy Butler sat with the Heat, Pat Riley calling him out and saying he should play more and everything else, and didn't get a contract extension. So it felt like there was some level of opening, at least tangentially, to go get Jimmy Butler. I don't think the discussions, Ice, ever truly got serious to a point that you could even say, okay, they're in a deal zone now. Like, this can happen. But I don't think Joel Embiid has been happy. Even though they wound up getting Paul George, he wanted Jimmy Butler back over there. And I think he made that known. And they couldn't make it happen. So I'm not saying he's pouting, but I'm saying that there's a lot going on there. And Ice, this is the other thing for me. Tyrese Maxey has to call out Joel Embiid in this team meeting. He's a player. He's a player who's hurt. And even though he's an all-star and has a close relationship with Joel Embiid, like, by everything I was told, it was not some confrontational meeting. It was one where, you know, those guys have a lot of sweat equity with each other, and it wasn't taken personally. Here's my question, Ice. Daryl Morey is there. He's the president of basketball operations. Nick Nurse is the head coach. That's the leadership.
Right.
It's time for the head coach and the GM to be the head coach and the GM. If a player needs to be called out, it's one thing for player accountability. I'm 100% with Tyrese Maxey. He didn't step out of place. He didn't step out of line with that.
But for me,
I think it was much more incumbent on Daryl Morey and Nick Nurse to step forward and be, if you're the leaders of this team, if you're the guys on the masthead, you guys need to be the ones, because let's say that conversation doesn't go well, right? No matter what happens from this point, Ice, yeah, those guys have a great relationship, but what happens if the wrong thing is said or someone takes something the wrong way, and now you got a relationship that's tarnished because you two didn't step up to do your job as leaders of this franchise? You're 2-11. Yeah. You guys should be calling team meetings.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. And I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure what maybe they were waiting on. You know, he's only played 3 games this season. Maybe they were waiting to see if he would play out of it. Right. As a player who's gone through injury, you know, it attacks every part of you. It attacks the mental, the physical, the spiritual. Right. The energy level, being in a gym, knowing that your body's not doing what it wants to do. Joel Embiid has told us that he's had frustrations with his body not healing the way it should and not doing what he's asking it to do. And this is a player last year that averaged 34 points in the season. You know, this is a player that was top 5 in the world at playing a game. And so I think he is going through, obviously, some struggles with the injury. Maybe leadership was trying to see if he would play out of it and if it would get better. Maybe you wait until, you know, Paul George, who just got off minutes restriction, looks a little bit more consistent. And maybe I think they were just waiting for a couple of games for it to get there. But I think what I like about the situation the most is that Tyrese Maxey was like, nah, we can't wait. You know, yes, you call this meeting. Yes, we have to have a conversation. But leadership starts with the coaching staff and GM. But it also starts with the players. It starts with the main players. We know that, that they rock the boat. They tip the scale every single time. And so I liked that, you know, we saw that Joel Embiid was, you know, willing to take this criticism, not taking it personally. That shows that you're a vet, that you understand what's expected of you. And hopefully he grows in that. I think there's just still is a question about all of these things we're talking about are the intangible things, right? There's still a question about him getting on the court and getting in shape and getting back to playing basketball. Then there's still a question about chemistry for this team. They picked up so many new players. They haven't been able to play with their big three on the same court yet this season. And they're 2-11, right? And so then there's an added amount of pressure that once these players do return, they're trying to build chemistry, you're building it under a mountain of pressure because you're already at the bottom of the league. Yeah, there's time to turn it around, but I think the time in which this meeting came was very timely and necessary. I'm with you. I think leadership from Nick Nurse and Maury should have stepped in a little bit earlier, but we're here now. A player said something. Hopefully that made everybody kind of get like, okay, we need to wake the hell up and figure it out and move forward.
And think about this from Tyrese Maxey's standpoint. Think about what he has sacrificed theoretically to this point. Remember, y'all, Tyrese Maxey waited to get his extension so that the 76ers could have cap space to go get a Paul George. Usually, that is not standard operating procedure in the NBA. If you are a max player, you go get your money as soon as possible, especially when you have people who you're not sure if they're going to kick it that way and still give you that max contract if you wind up getting hurt. Remember all the stuff about James Harden saying Daryl Morey is a liar and I'll never trust him again and everything else. That stuff, whether it's true or not, when players go out of their way to be so blatantly disrespectful to the person in charge, people in the league, people around the league, players talk, people around the league find out what you are made of. And no matter what you think of James Harden, not everybody thought that he was wrong. Not everybody thought that he was crazy and lying and everything else. All right, cool. Put that to the side. Put Tyrese Maxey stuff to the side. It's getting very late, very early. Yeah. At 2-11, you're looking at the standings and you're saying, oh, okay, the East isn't that great. You're right, the East isn't that great. But Ice, remember they told us in the very beginning, we're going to slow walk this thing so that we want to be ready for the postseason. If you don't get a top three seed in the Eastern Conference, you're not going to the finals, period, point blank. Like, you've had an eighth seed go to the finals, but by and large, it's the one or the two seed that goes to the finals, and in some cases, it's the three seed. Like, I went through this a few episodes ago, maybe a month or so ago with Bomani about, you know, just how hard it is to do this if you only have home court advantage in round one. And the 76ers have not made a conference final since 2001, and I was a junior in high school, okay? I ain't that young no more, y'all. And Ice, you talked about the chemistry on the floor, and here's something that people need to know. Comparatively, the New York Knicks are landlocked. The Milwaukee Bucks are landlocked in terms of personnel moves that you can make and improving your team throughout the course of this season. That's not the case with the 76ers. They still have their draft picks. They can still maneuver around a little bit. Even, you know, Daryl Morey, as bad as he is with the people stuff, he can be really good with the numbers. But you can't evaluate your team in essence of the trade deadline until you figure out what players are on the floor, what they look like. I can't tell you what you need unless I actually see it on the floor. You're second to last in offensive efficiency. You are last in field goal percentage, second to last in the 3-point line, second to last in rebounding. And if defense hasn't been bad, but if your offense is this bad, if your player availability is this bad, I can't help you.
It don't matter.
To me, this is
tough being a Sixers fan. This is actually why I've never really considered myself a Sixers fan, is because there's always something. You know, like you don't understand that term when your mother says it when you're young. Like, oh, it's always something. You don't get that until you're an adult or until you decide to become a Sixers fan and you understand that it's always something. Okay, that was just me complaining.
No. Or if you are a former Detroit Lions fan, of which I quit them well over 20 years ago. And now that they're about to go to the Super Bowl, you know who's not jumping back on that bandwagon? This guy. No matter what y'all say, I ain't never coming back. Now, I'm never coming back, please. I gave up toxic relationships a long time ago. Me and you can have a conversation about toxic relationships after the show, but no more toxic relationships. Now, the thing I do want to point out, because Ice, you talked about having head injuries and having head surgery. I don't think anybody's taking away from Joel Embiid being hurt. The body is the body. Like, some dudes have bad bodies. Some dudes have bad limbs. Like, I don't get sometimes the consternation over Kawhi Leonard. Sometimes if you're hurt, you can't play. What Tyrese Maxey, I think, was talking about, hey, man, if you're here, show up on time. Those are things that you can control. You can control showing up for whatever treatment, rehab, practices, and everything else that you're going to get. Those are things that you can control while you're trying to work your way back. The work ethic, the showing up and being an example. Even if you're not on the floor, and Tyrese Maxey ain't on the floor. You know how hard it is for Tyrese Maxey to step up and use his voice when he's not playing? Dudes right. usually not playing don't want to be heard from because they know ain't nobody trying to hear from them. But he was right. the one who had to step up because he was the only one with the sweat equity with Embiid. So for him, for Embiid to basically not be doing the things that he should be doing to get himself back on the floor, even if he can't, that speaks volumes about how important this is for him and how important this is for everybody else.
Mm. I completely agree with you. And again, being a player, sometimes it resonates more when your teammate says it, when someone that you have that relationship with says it, can say the hard things, rather than the coach or GM that's supposed to say that, that's supposed to hold you accountable, that controls your check. Yeah.
Yeah, look, I've said it all the time. Daryl Morey, and I thought on Media Day, maybe I was fooled, because about 5 minutes into Media Day, it was announced, and it sort of came reverberating through the room a little bit, that Dikembe Mutombo had passed. And Daryl Morey had spoke first, and Daryl Morey was on, like, the podium, and someone from the 76ers pulled him off the podium to let him know. So when he came back, like, Daryl was visibly shaken. Like, he was in tears. Like, his voice was cracking. And it was almost like, oh, like, the feelings part of this. Like, you were thinking, not like symbolic, I'm not trivializing Dikembe's death as something, but I'm saying for purposes of exposing something within someone that you didn't believe that he had these emotions and feelings or whatever, you're like, okay, maybe Daryl is starting, maybe this is revealing that Daryl really gets it, that yeah. team building is more than just numbers, that this is a people business, and that all the things that come with that. And then you see instances like this where Tyrese Maxey has to call a team meeting after you drop a 17-point lead to Miami and you lose by 19 or whatever it was. Mm. That's like a 35-point turnaround. That's really hard to
19
do.
It was 19-point deficit, lost by 17. Jesus.
Yeah, 36-point. 36-point turnaround. I ain't no mathematician, but I think that's 36 points. How hard it is to get outscored by 36 points within a game. That's what calls a team meeting. Because nobody else has bothered to step up to do it before. That's a thing. Now, Ice, I'm very curious how we have framed, as we moving forward a little bit before the break, how we have framed this Tyrese Haliburton, Sacramento Kings, De'Aaron Fox deal. When Sabonis went from Indy, Haliburton went to the Pacers. And it seemed like the Pacers had gotten the better end of it. The Pacers went to the conference finals last year. Tyrese Haliburton, like, became this bigger star than people expected, especially in the light of the NBA Cup last year. He was there. He was on the podium. People were like, oh, he's got some Steve Nash to his game. The Pacers are playing fun, da-da-da-da-da. If you look at it, not just in light of what the Indiana Pacers have started, how they start the season at a 6-8 mark, De'Aaron Fox has been really damn good. over the past couple of years. And we don't give him enough credit, A, because he's playing in Sacramento, right? Like, you're in the Bay Area, but you're not quite in the Bay. You're in Sacramento. Yeah. And not to say, not to put these two guys against each other, but because we quickly framed that trade as Pacers beat Kings, the Kings are the Kings, and then look what they gave up. They gave up the wrong player or whatever it was. I don't know if that's the case anymore. I don't know if that, maybe it never was the case, but it certainly doesn't look like the case right now.
I mean, it's tough because, yes, there are two fantastic guards, but they serve two different purposes, right? Mm-hmm. Fox is an all-out scorer, lefty sniper, beautiful three-point shot, beautiful footwork, whereas Hallie is known for his facilitating and how he mm-hmm. can set up teammates. And so, like, even if you – obviously, if you just look at the numbers of it, it's going to look different because their roles are different. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, maybe conversations about which one makes a team better. Right. Which one allows everyone else to kind of eat, but also can get a team, you know, to the next level, you know, past the first round of playoffs. Right. But I think what we're seeing from and I'll just speak maybe to, you know, Halliburton is he's averaging 16 right now. He's fifth on his team in scoring. And, you know, we chatted off the air with producer John about what his role really needs to be or what it should look like or what the expectation needs to be. To me, I think that the expectation is that he's a top four scorer on the team. I don't think he has to score 25 points a game. I think that, yes, sometimes that will come. I think more so specifically for his growth, though, it's the consistency and being able to shoot the basketball. We know that point guards who have a high level of facilitating and getting people open often get that ball whipped back around to them on the three-point line, catch and shoot. That has to be at a high percentage. I feel like that's an area of growth. Where on the other side for Fox, you're absolutely right. He looks fantastic. He looks comfortable. Yeah, I'm not sure how we decide kind of who's got the better one other than team success at the end of the year.
Yeah, I mean, look, De'Aaron Fox is having a 29 and 8 night. Six assists. And now he's, you know, working and playing with DeMar DeRozan. And the West is just a gauntlet. Right. And that's kind of like the bad part for the Sacramento Kings. They're good enough to be in the conversation. Like they're not at the bottom. They're not in that bottom rung of the Western Conference, but they're not good enough to really be part of this Phoenix, Oklahoma City, Lakers, Warriors, Denver discussion that is kind of dominating the conference right now. For Halliburton, for one, I'm not sure if people notice, he got hurt during the Olympics. And because he wasn't playing a lot, nobody thought about him. Oh, well, he's not out on the floor. But he had gotten hurt. It was real quiet. And of course, once a player gets hurt at the Olympics, the team steps in. It's like, hey, let's make sure that we don't get him in worse condition by the time it's time for his real job. So you look at the numbers, 38 from the field, 29 from three. That ain't good. And the Pacers are a team that, although they got swept in the conference finals last year, they made it to the conference finals. They beat the Knicks in round two in that thrilling second round series. They beat a beat-up Bucks in round one that has kind of spiraled the Bucks a little bit because the Bucks were without Dame. They were without Middleton. Middleton had missed time. Dame had missed time. Giannis didn't play the entire series. So now you're looking at the Pacers and saying, okay, was all that fool's gold? And now, is this not the real Pacers, but are you a middling Eastern Conference team where there's like two really good Eastern Conference teams and a bunch of teams that are all trying to muscle their way into that real estate? So I'm very fascinated by that entire deal and that trade. I think we might have to come revisit it as a whole. But we're going to pause right here. And when we come back, we're going to pay some bills. We're going to be back with more disappointing players this year on this episode of The Good Word. Back on The Good Word with Ice. It is time to talk about a couple of more disappointing personnel in the league. I'm going to let you go first with this one, considering getting in shape has been the theme of today's episode.
I know. And why do I feel like every other time I talk to you, I'm ragging on this man? Why do I feel like every other time I talk to you, I'm just like, Zion is not in shape still. He's still
I don't think you're
healthy.
Fat shaming. I do not think
I'm
you're fat
still
shaming.
Single. Like, it's just all the stills. It's all the stills. But it is disappointing. It's disappointing. I mean, with, you know, it's disappointing with what the Pelicans have done in terms of acquisition and have gotten different players and are starting to build pieces and really seem like, you know, really committed to building around Zion and making him their player. For him to just still not be on the court consistently. He's played 6 games this season. He's shooting a career low 45% from the field. Again, it's not surprising. When you're injured, it's tough to come back and to establish your rhythm, to feel like yourself, to knock down the shots you normally would. So you've got to shake off the rust. But again, when you're constantly in this choppy place with your body, with the physicality, you know, with rhythm, it's just going to look like this. Averaging 22.7 points, but again, like played 6 games. And it seems like we don't know when to expect his return.
That's the thing. That's the big thing. And the fact that he's getting hamstring injuries, leg injuries, things that have to do with how much explosiveness he can exert when he's out there. And that hardwood floor is unforgiving, especially for someone who's 6'6 or 6'4, whatever, you know, size he is. Like, he needs every bit of that explosion that makes him special. And for the Pelicans, it's important to know, because I watched them the other night against the Lakers, and they competed really hard against LeBron, against AD. They didn't have enough to actually finish them off. And here's why they don't have enough. Jose Alvarado, out. Jordan Hawkins, out. Herb Jones, out. CJ McCollum, out. DeJounte Murray, out. That's almost damn near starting five before you get to Zion Williamson being out with this hamstring injury. Like, they are doing the Lord's work just in staying competitive. Like, I'm not going to bag on them and call them disappointing as a unit, but Zion is always going to come into focus, because it seems like so much of it is it's either bad body or he doesn't get himself in good enough shape to play, to look sustainable. And it's funny, in one of my group chats, I forgot when it was, Ice, it's maybe like 2 or 3 months ago, and someone put a picture in the group chat of Zion from his very first media day, right? And people were saying he was fat then, but I swore it was Photoshopped when I looked at it, because that man looked chiseled. I'm like, wait, we caught this man fat? Like, the way that he looked, like, John, I'm sure John, when John gets a moment or whatever, he's going to put that picture up on YouTube, and you're going to look at it, and people are going to look at it and be like, wait, we were saying that this version of Zion was fat and not that he was chiseled. That man looked chiseled compared to the way he looks now. And it's unfair. I'm going to say it's unfair. It is easy for all of us to bag on people who struggle with weight, because we look at that as self-control. We look at that as being something that you can easily handle. Do push-ups and push away from the table. Like, all of that. Like, if you've been around Black families during holidays, they'll tell you how you feel. Hey, Vinny, you're not as skinny as you used to be. Like, damn, that's like, Auntie, you talking to me? Yeah, I'm talking to you. Next day, guess who's not drinking for the next month? Your boy. That's all it takes.
Oh my gosh. I resonate with that. For me, it's my mom. It's my mom with bread. She'd be like, you're getting another roll? Yes, I am. Yes, maybe I'm trying to put on weight. Mate, dang. Hey, yes, I am.
I'm telling you, you are still in your 20s. Don't you worry. Okay. You do not have to try. At some point, when you turn 30, me and Chris Herring had this conversation on Monday.
Everyone says this. Why does everyone wish?
Oh, no, it's not wish. It's not wish.
Oh,
it's fact
okay.
of life.
I just need to turn 30 and then, like, I'll see.
Facts of life.
I think this is one of the things I'm just refusing to believe. Like, you know, I don't know. Yes, I know everybody else has had experience with gaining weight after a certain age, but I'm just refusing to believe it has to happen.
Look, you
unless I have children. Duh. But I'm refusing.
You can refuse to believe anything.
I am.
And then life, and then look, I can't, I'm not saying that it's going to happen for you. I'm saying it happened for me. When I turned 30, literally, things changed. Now, I will also say this. as my hairline, like I still got my hairline is still game tight to be my age. Like there's some people who've lost the battle, right? But as it started to just do a little bit of a early Jordan career fadeaway, not like a Michael Jordan look, but a Michael Jordan fadeaway, just a little bit of a fade, right? The facial hair started coming in. It wasn't just the mustache and the goatee. It's a little bit of beard work coming in post 35. So there's never like a sweet spot of like, okay, you gain just enough weight where you're not a stick figure, but you haven't gained too much weight to be a butterball. You know what I mean? Like it's kind of in this weird spot, right?
I hear you. Have you decided if you're going full beard for your birthday?
Oh, no. That was me. That was me putting on a dare. Like I was just dared by someone. I wasn't cutting this off. I worked too hard to get this.
We still do dares. Gosh.
Challenges.
Okay.
I was challenged on Instagram. Someone said to me, you know, about, you know, old pictures and are you going to keep your facial hair? I'm like, yeah, I don't keep my facial hair, but I do like the young look. And I said, you know, let's put it to a poll. And it was overwhelming, overwhelming. Everybody said, keep the beard.
I voted.
You did. You did vote. Too. I appreciate it. It was like 78% to 20. Now, here's the other disappointing player that I have. Mm-hmm. And this is close to John's heart. So John, have your heart be still. Luka Doncic, that's someone that I am a little disappointed in. Not that he's playing, not that he's a bad player or anything like that. Like everybody put your torches away. But this is a team that went to the NBA Finals last year, and we expected Luka Doncic to A, be able to elevate this team back to that spot, and B, elevate his own game to get to an MVP level. And when I've looked at one of the things that I've looked at with Dallas is they have closers. They have two closers who can handle the ball, and then you add Klay Thompson. And you have another year of maturity for Derek Lively, you know, as a starting center type who's going to be really, really good. You think of Luka Doncic as the constant. And they lost four straight games, Ice. And this is not a way that a team with Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving is supposed to lose four straight games. They lose to Phoenix at home by one. You lose to the Nuggets on the road by two. You lose to Golden State by three. You lose to Utah in the last second play. Here's the thing. You can almost directly point to Luka Doncic underwhelming in the fourth quarter of all of those games. I was at the Golden State game. He scored 2 points in the fourth quarter. The game against Denver, Kyrie Irving had it going, scored like 16 in the fourth. Luka, maybe he ceded too much space to Kyrie. Maybe he tried to take over when he couldn't have. That's a problem. And then in Utah, I don't know who the hell he was looking at when Jordan Clarkson turned into Magic Johnson on the last play of the game. Like, I have zero clue what he was doing and gave up a dunk on the second to last possession. So you look all of that and you look at the numbers where the shooting is down, the efficiency is down, the numbers are down, and then the Mavericks are outside of the play-in in the Western Conference. If we're going to give Luka Doncic a lot of credit when Dallas plays well, you got to give him a decent share of accountability when they are underwhelming, and that's a big reason why he's on my list.
Yeah, and I think, you know, even watching the game's effort.
Yes.
Sometimes his effort is just lackluster, piss poor. You know, are you getting paid to be out there, or are you out there because you have to be? It doesn't look like sometimes he is giving max effort, and on a team in which I think everybody else does, on a team in which, you know, Klay, Kai, D Live, etc., all of them to me seem to not, you, there aren't these plays where you can look and just say, oh, they just gave up, oh, they just like weren't going to try and rotate. But there are several that you could clip for Luka. I had a coach that would clip these plays. And this would be what she would like to introduce to us before the game. Like, okay, if we're going to try to win and get to the NCAA tournament, we can't do this if we look like this. And it would be getting blown by and no recovery. You know, no backside rotation. Giving up a three because you were supposed to be the next rotation and you didn't get there. So I'm also not a fan of his effort. You know, you talk about shooting and efficiency. I think we can talk about fatigue. We're seeing that across the league with the amount of players that are injured, with the amount of players that, again, coming off of Olympics year, put in extra time in the summer. And so now we're seeing, you know, some of those lasting effects. But also, to me, I'm just not crazy about the effort that he's giving defensively.
No, you're getting picked on. He's getting picked on.
Absolutely. But that's when you also, that's when you have to take it the most personal.
Yep.
You know, you don't get picked on and then let yourself get picked on.
And here's the other thing. If they're singling you out as the mark, like in today's NBA, it's very, everybody switches, especially on the perimeter. So you can pretty much hunt your matchups. Like we saw it a little bit last night in the Cleveland-Boston game. We're going to get to that on the other side of the break. But Luka is too big and physical to be hunted. Like he's not a, yes, he's not the quickest guy and everything else, but he's big enough, especially where we're supposed to be able to be a little more handsy on the perimeter, to be able to keep a guy in front of you until the help defense comes. So it's a lot going on there. And for me, Dallas, I picked Dallas. I was tempted to pick Dallas to win it all this year. I was tempted to look at them and say, you guys have enough experience, enough heartbreak, and just enough to put you over the top. But that's assuming that Luka Doncic is the constant. Kyrie Irving has been model citizen, basketball player. That has not been the case for Luka, and they are only going to go as far as he takes them. And I'm fascinated by how that is going to play itself out, especially after the first 15 games or so. But we're going to take our last break, and when we come back, there was an interesting game in Boston last night with the Celtics and the Cavaliers. We're going to talk about that. That was one of those goofy NBA Cup games with the green floor and Peyton Pritchard hitting threes and all that type of stuff. You're listening to The Good Word here on Yahoo Sports. Welcome back to The Good Word, Ice. Let's get into the last word. The Cavs came into last night, the NBA Cup game with the goofy courts with the Boston Celtics, undefeated. Like, it was one of the biggest games that you can have in an early season. You know, they had the second best start in NBA history behind the Golden State Warriors, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not that Cleveland, we looked at them as a team that's really a championship contender, at least not yet, right? But this is a big test going against the Boston Celtics team that we just feel like they have just broken the game in terms of the math. And I felt like the game played out almost the way that I expected. I don't think Cleveland should have walked away from last night's loss. They lost by three, but it was pretty much like a 5 to 7 point game in the last minute or so. I don't think they should walk away from last night's game feeling deflated or defeated against a Celtics team at home. Boston, what she hit, what 22 threes, right? This is what they do, right?
Literally.
Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Peyton Pritchard, all those guys, like, that's what they do. I think there were some things with the Cavs that were, I won't say unexpected, but I think Darius Garland having an off night, struggling with the size at the rim, when he got to the rim, trying to get to the rim, like the size and the length disrupted him a lot more than maybe people anticipated.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's necessarily going to change. He's like 3 of 18. He went full John Starks. And they picked on Georges Niang, you know, in crunch time. They hunted those matchups. We talked about Luka getting hunted. They hunted Georges Niang. How do you think the Cavs acquitted themselves last night? Because I felt like the Celtics just did what they do.
Yeah. You know, I like some things that I saw. They had a 40-point third quarter. They outscored the Celtics 40-29 in the third.
Yep.
Easily, when it could have gotten very ugly, because at one point Celtics had stretched it to like 18.
Yeah.
And so there was a time in which they could have bent, but they didn't, or could have broke, but they didn't. I felt like, you know, Evan Mobley played really, really great, like 22 points, 11 rebounds, and 6 assists. You know, pure ball of energy, did what he was supposed to do inside. I think Donovan Mitchell did what he was supposed to do. He went 13 of 29. He didn't shoot the three very great, like only 3 of 11. And so I think at times like that hurt. But I think the real story was just Darius Garland. You know, him having 8 points, it's just tough. They need all 5 of their starters to contribute in that way. And I feel like he didn't necessarily pull his weight. And you're absolutely right. Like, he got the shots that he normally takes. downhill, couple of floaters using the glass, but it was really just the length. So to me, that was the only maybe glaring thing that I saw that was poor. Otherwise, they outscored the Celtics in both the third and fourth quarters. I mean, they put together really good sequences of basketball. But when you give up 22 threes, you know, it's the fourth game in a row in which the Celtics have knocked down 20 or more threes. When you allow them to do what they want to do, especially on their home floor, it's just near impossible to beat them.
Yeah, I mean, look, I hate to say this for y'all. They're doing this without Kristaps Porzingis. And they don't even look like they miss him. That's the tough thing for this. Like, I feel like we should just make our reservations in June to be hanging out in the Boston Harbor. And that's a really bad Boston accent. And to deal with all of those Boston Celtics fans, they just look like a perfectly built team for the way that this game is played. Whether you like the way this game is played is a completely different discussion. And we've had that discussion here, and Celtics fans can be, you know, quibble and everything else. But they are really, really good. They are great at defending with length, at hunting threes, driving and kicking. Like, they're literally playing the math. They're playing the game to the way that the math says play the game. Layups and threes. And Tatum and Brown have sort of figured this thing out together. And the regular season just looks like an exercise for them. Now, for Cleveland, Evan Mobley bringing the ball, taking it off the glass, bringing the ball off the floor, like, those were developments. Like, I'm glad that they're playing faster because he can get up and down. Jared Allen can get up and down. Like, you need to take advantage, especially if you are a small team in the backcourt. Use your bigs to beat their bigs up and down the floor, get early seals, things like that, to try to get early scores. Evan Mobley showed a little bit of nasty last night. And I like that he showed a little bit of nasty. I like that. I think on one play, he literally just threw Jason Tatum out of the way. And the ref didn't call the fight. Threw Jason Tatum out of the way. Got a put back. Like, the Boston fans were up in arms because, of course, they are. Like, this is just how they get down. But I like the fact, I think that's something that bodes well for them is, hey, you know what? Maybe we can't exploit this Darius Garland thing. Maybe Garland turns into more of a standstill shooter because that's where he's going to get his best looks against this version of the Celtics. But if Evan Mobley's going to play like a grown-ass man, that could bode a little bit better in the long term for the Celtics because I think the Cavs' long-term prospects, not just this year, but down the line, is completely dependent on Evan Mobley turning into not just one of the best defenders in the NBA, which he already is, but turning into an absolute monster on both ends of the floor and taking this team by the scruff of its neck. I think it's actually possible. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is my friend Ice Young. Thanks to Ice for giving us some of her time today and every single Wednesday. Thanks to producer John and the entire team who worked so hard from behind the scenes. Only one episode next week due to Thanksgiving, but I'll be back early on Monday with another episode of The Good Word. And until then, everybody be safe.